What's going on, guys? Your boy Elroy here, and welcome back to the Your Boy Elroy MMA Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Prepigina, and I'm here with my good buddy, Andre Rodriguez. Andre, look, I got an action figure of you.
Hey.
How are you, buddy?
I'm doing all right.
Yeah. So you have let me know that you have an injury, so we had to hurry up and press the record button, because if you pass out, I need to have your last words on air. So I'm going to sell the rights to, like, a theater.
Perfect.
Yeah, so I just wanted to get on today. Obviously, we put an episode out every week for the last year and a half now. So I guess this is one of the slower weeks, especially, like, I think during the start of the pandemic, we had a lot to talk about just because, like, it's like, oh, what's MMA going to do? Or, you know, like, it was a lot of what ifs that we had to talk about. But this week, like, is the first week off for the UFC in the last few weeks. And honestly, there is not a lot of news. So we do this every couple months where we just kind of catch up with each other. We will talk about the Poirier, you know, Hooker card. Actually, did you want to get that out of the way now before we just vibe for like a half hour?
Yeah, sure. Sounds good to me.
Yeah, so let me pull up the card and let's actually talk about that, because I think that the talks of that fight, the main event being, because we'll start off with the main event, being fight of the year, I think a lot of people's memories are very short. Because if you remember, before the pandemic, we had one of the greatest fights of, like, the greatest women's fight of all time that I can remember. I'm sure you agree, in Joanna Jędrzejczyk versus Wei Li Zhang. And then last, you know, I guess 2 weeks ago now, we had Shane Burgos versus Josh Emmett, which was incredible. And this was, like, right above that level, Andre. So when it comes to Dan Hooker versus Dustin Poirier, what'd you see in that fight? Because I saw an extremely motivated Dan Hooker, very calculated in those first three rounds. And then when it got to the fourth and fifth, I don't know if he just took too much damage or Justin was, you know, just too much for him, that Justin overtook him and really put a whooping on him in those last few rounds. So what did you think of both their performances, the fight overall, and, you know, it being a fight of the year candidate? Like, in my opinion, I think round two, round of the year, hands down. But as far as fight of the year, you know, kind of, you know, people, I think they just have a short memory.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the biggest things that we can take away from this last main event was the fact that we've seen just how tough Dan Hooker really is. And we've also seen that even though I feel like he was pushed a little too fast, I also can say with confidence that he's definitely top five. I think he proved that being able to land as much damage as he did to Dustin, even hurting him at one point and showing the people that when it comes to the striking, he's no one to mess with. And now with guys like Edson Barboza out of the way, he's kind of taken that role as one of the more high level strikers at 155. And I thought his performance was excellent, but the one thing I can say, and I hate to say this is a criticism, but you know, facts are facts. He's a 3-round fighter. And it's evident in his fighting. He puts everything in his combinations and his kicks and his knees for the first three rounds, and after that, he just fades. That's something I know he can work on, something that I know he'll get better at. But at the same time, I understand where that comes from, because if you think about it, he wasn't a big name at 145. And the reason he moved up was because he wanted a better opportunity, and he probably didn't want to cut as much weight as he was cutting because he was a 3-round, you know, undercard guy at 145. But now he's facing tough competition, And his last two fights have been very tough. So I think overall, he showed his mettle, but the one who really shined was Dustin Poirier, not only showing that he could withstand the storm that Dan Hooker is in the first three rounds, but he was able to really take over and show his veteran status, and also he was able to prove that he is at least the second best lightweight in the world, in my opinion. We're going to see once Khabib fights Justin who the best is, but right now he's right there. And he's definitely deserving of another title shot because he's earned it. He faced a really tough opponent, a guy who had, what, 3 inches on him in height, definitely like, what, 4 inches, maybe 3 or 4 inches in reach, a very good K1 level kickboxer. And he had a lot of things he had to worry about. Even the takedowns were something that I didn't even see coming from Dan. We know that he likes to shoot occasionally, but he was really going for it. And he was able to prevail and really steal those last three rounds. So I enjoyed watching that fight. And even though this is a super stacked division, when you have a promotion that's willing to put two guys together that know what's at stake and how much is on the line to put on fights like that, it just goes to show you how high level the UFC is. And overall, it was a great performance. If I had to say my top three best fights right now of 2020, it was definitely Zhang versus Joanna. Then it's Dustin versus Dan, and the third one is obviously Josh Emmett versus Shane Burgos. So those were all excellent fights.
Yeah, back-to-back weeks, just firefights, And, I thought the co-main event was a lot of fun. I think that Mike Perry, the whole corner thing, it is what it is. I thought it was a lot of fun, just like seeing his girl in the corner. It was fun to hear her yell, like, put your hands up, because that is something that I yell at home. Any fight I'm watching, if you put your hands down, I'm screaming at you to put your hands up. But yeah, he looked good. Mickey Gall, I think he's just a step up a step under, like a Mike Perry level. Also, Mickey Gall still, I think, has some time to grow. Finally, I think he is a little more mature than he was previously, and his striking was sharp. I think he looked really good on the feet. You peg him as, or not you, but like people peg him as like that jiu-jitsu guy. I think that his striking is very, very solid. He was throwing some stuff at Mike Perry that I was like, wow, that probably hurt. Definitely hurt.
Yeah, especially the kicks. He had a really solid 1-2. He was working that left hook into his combinations, and I was really proud of the leaps and bounds that he's made from his last few fights. I mean, the kid has shown promise, and he's shown that with his size, I mean, he's going to be a problem. But the best part about his career right now is that he's in a promotion where there are no easy fights. If you want to be the best in the UFC, you have to fight the best. And literally, we have seen this throughout the years where guys who have, let's say, gone 500 in the UFC have gone out to other promotions and have been champions, and sometimes champions in two different divisions. So it goes to show you the level and the caliber of a fighter you have to be at in order to compete in the UFC long term. And I think Mickey is going to end up looking back at this fight, seeing the improvements that he made, and what he was working on in the gym definitely worked, and he's going to be able to implement that and further improve his game and become more well-rounded. I think that some of the mistakes he made against Mike Perry was he allowed Mike to push the pace on him too much. And although Mickey's not really one right now to sit on his punches, but he definitely showed that he was willing to go blow for blow with Mike Perry. And as long as he continues to sharpen up his kickboxing, I think that eventually he will rely less on his grappling and will end up becoming a more decent striker who can land damage. And when he's taken to the ground, he's able to capitalize with submissions and sweeps, and he's able to actually win fights that way. And I think over time he'll get that. But I want to talk about Mike Perry's performance. Whether we like the fact that he didn't have a corner or not, you know, the facts remain. This man came out there to prove a point. It was evident, and even I said it, I had a feeling that Mike Perry was going to knock him out cold, but that didn't happen. What did we really see? We saw a lot more of a calm and stabilized Mike Perry, who was less focused on getting that one punch knockout and more focused on actually winning rounds, conserving his energy, and actually taking his time with Mickey. Mickey's such a young guy and such a high-level talent that he's able to really adapt to the situation. But Mike showed that, hey, sometimes experience does beat youth. And even in the last round where he was like winning the grappling exchanges, you saw the guard passing and taking the back and going into a crucifix from deep half. Like, seeing stuff like that was incredible for me, because it shows you that Mike Perry really is that good. And the fight, like, against, you know, for example, Vicente Luque, that was no fluke. That was a focused Mike Perry who wanted to win fights and who wanted to fight the best. And I think he's still at that pinnacle. He just needs two or three more fights with those kind of performances to push him back into that spot where he can call out guys like Darren Till in the future.
Yeah, I thought it was very good that he was able to do it by himself. I also loved, again, someone that I think has matured. I love that he knows that he's going to need a team, but he doesn't want to join a gym, basically. He just wants, you know, two or three guys that he could work with, and he will have a corner his next fight, it sounds like.
Yeah, and you know what? Sometimes that works for people. You have guys like Dominic Reyes that trains out of a small gym with people that he trusts because he knows what he's going to get day in and day out. And I've seen the success of having a smaller team that is able to really hone in on focusing on the main skills that you need to work on and further sharpening the skills that you already have. And sometimes it's good to be in a big camp where you get so much high-level talent and exposure that you're able to, like, really take that and use it to your advantage. But sometimes there are fighters who need a smaller space, a more concentrated space where they can truly focus on themselves and they have people around them that understand what their end goals are. And I think Mike Perry would definitely benefit from that. He just has to find the right guys that understand him. Because at the end of the day, like he said, you're employing dudes to tell you what to do. But if you feel like you should be doing what you already know, then you should have somebody who can work with that. And we've seen coaches, you know, not to always bring him up, but like Firas Sahabi, for example, he's always been known as the guy who's not going to tell you what to do, but show you a good strategy based off of your skills and your mindset and how you fight with your own style. And hopefully Mike Perry puts together a good team that's going to help him get back to the top of the welterweight division, because I think he belongs there, and I think he can definitely make another run at being in the top 10.
Yeah, so I thought that this fight was going to be right under, but it was two fights before. How much fun was Kyle Daukaus versus Brendan Allen?
Man, the grappling exchanges were good. Constant reversals, submission attempts. Kyle Daukaus showed that he belongs in the UFC, and I'm so proud of him. Because, listen, he did not fight an easy fight. I mean, an easy fighter. Brendan Allen is a legit 185er who was willing to go in there and throw it all out on the line. And I think that because Kyle Daukaus took that fight, I know that Dana and Sean Shelby and those guys will definitely have a newfound respect for him, where they can say, you know what, Kyle Daukaus is definitely at the level of the UFC, and we want him back. Kyle is such a tough dude. And, you know, due to the controversies of that fight, although it was a fun fight to watch, I didn't really like some of the comments that Brendan Allen put on his Twitter. I thought that he kind of, although he did give credit to Daukaus, he kind of clapped back at most people that were saying that he didn't, that it was really a draw. I had it a draw. I didn't think that Kyle won. I felt that he just got robbed of a fair shake. After watching it again, I realized that, yeah, I understood why it could have been a draw. But to say that that fight was 30-27, I really felt was unfair. 29-28, I'll take it, but I really thought that the fight ended as a draw. But overall, I can't wait to see Kyle back, and I know that his next performance, he's going to really show just how good he is once he starts to improve. But man, I mean, he showed excellent striking. He showed excellent grappling. He showed poise, and he showed that he was able to deal with pressure, deal with having a huge cut on his face early in the fight, and be able to finish the fight. I mean, you can't get a better debut than that other than winning. So I know that he'll be back. And listen, shout out to Brendan Allen anyways. This guy's going to be a serious contender because he definitely has all the skills to be in the top 10. So,
yeah. Both of them do. And like you said, I'm someone who scored it a draw. I didn't think it was a robbery, though, because I do think if you watch the fight again, Brendan Allen just was like one slight step ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But again, if you're someone as well who gives out a 10-8 like that, you know, you might be able to score it a draw in a sense. But Kyle Daukaus, I just have to go back to that Brock Lesnar line. You know, do you see me now? Like, I think that the UFC has to look at him, and they have to bring him back after that. Like, even that Contender Series performance, like, is it his fault that he dominated the guy? Like, is that a bad thing? Obviously, because, you know, what's the name? Dana just wanted to see him kill a guy, and he dominated the guy, but Dana couldn't give him credit. He just wasn't ready to put him. But now after this fight, I think that he has a home now in the UFC. I like that fight a lot. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, me too, man. I know that a lot of people will still speculate, but at the end of the day, you can't judge these guys because they put on an excellent performance and they went in there and they did their jobs. Simple as that.
Yeah, what'd you think of the Maurice Greene versus John Volante fight?
Yeah, that was weird. Really weird.
What would you call the submission?
Quitting. I would call that quitting.
Good one.
Due to exhaustion.
Yes.
I hate to say it that way, but come on, John. You came in there with looking like me at heavyweight. Are you kidding me, man? Like, listen, I get it. Cutting weight is hard. But holy crap, that beer belly was crazy. I mean, he did pretty good. Landed good leg kicks, good overhands. But that submission made no sense. And, you know, it really just was because he was tired. But in my opinion, I don't think that's the best way to start out in a new division. Hopefully we don't see that like in the Gustafson-Werdum fight because that'd be horrible. But
yeah, I mean, I do think he does have a home at heavyweight. Maybe put on some muscle and not so much, you know, just it's clear that he just like, oh, I'm just not going to cut weight and I'll eat whatever I want. And hey, some people do that, you know, look at Roy Nelson. He's a fat slob, like, but he was a killer at one point. You know what I mean? Like, and I think John Volante looked very, very good against Maurice Greene. But Maurice Greene just, you know, was able to kind of suffocate him.
Yeah. I mean, listen, not coming from a place of criticism, because I think we all know that my number one favorite submission of all time is the Katagatami, the arm triangle. But hey, man, I mean, it was a solid win. Whatever. What I really took away from that fight was the post-fight interview that he had.
Very touching.
I thought it was
beautiful. Yeah, very touching.
It goes to show how much sacrifice these fighters have to go through to live out their dreams and make the UFC a career, like something that we definitely touched on last week. So, you know, at the end of the day, it comes down to who wants it more, and Maurice just wanted it more that night.
Yeah, I thought that was good. Kama Worthy, Luis Pena, they obviously delivered. I think so. I was listening to Post Wrestling today, and they talked about the ratings from Saturday. UFC was number one. Over a million people tuned in to the main card. And then number two in the night was the prelims, which was like almost 700,000 people. So for Luis Peña and Kama Worthy to draw, you know, almost 700,000 people, I think that's a win for those guys. Kama Worthy continues to show that he is, you know, an extremely exciting fighter. I think, what did he say? He wanted to put on, like, some savage fights. Like, I forgot who he said. It wasn't Tony Ferguson. It was someone else. He's like, I want to fight like that guy every time I go into the cage. And, you know, he has a knockout now and a submission in his UFC career. So I would like to see what he has left. You know, when he came and he knocked out the one young kid, his old training partner, he said, you know, this is my last chance. And he's seizing the opportunity. And I love that. That is so much fun to me.
Yeah, man, I agree. You know, it's beautiful to see when some guys, and he's still, even though he's a little older, but he still has so much time left, and this is his opportunity to make a surge, especially in that division. You know, he gets the opportunity to separate himself from the rest of the pack, and, you know, he has a lot of interesting skills, a very different style, but one thing you can't take away from him is that when he smells the finish, he goes for it, and he makes it his goal to finish every opponent. And I think that that's going to really take him far in the lightweight division as long as he can keep it up. And I think he will.
Yeah, there's, and I think I always say this when I see a fighter just having fun. There's nothing more exciting than watching your fighter have fun. Like, he has fun in there. For Luis Peña, hey, you know, a couple tough shakes, but it doesn't change the fact that he's, you know, fun to watch, and I think he still has time.
Yeah, it's kind of like a Mickey Gall situation. I feel that he has the style, he has the charisma, he's got the swag to be a UFC superstar, but sometimes it just takes a couple of fights. Maybe you lose, maybe you win, you know, in some tough decisions, but it just takes that experience in order to truly shape yourself as the kind of fighter you want to be. And if you think about it, he's got so much time. I mean, look at his frame for 155. That's a scary dude. 6'3" with a 75-inch reach. How many times do you see that in the UFC? And guys are actually successful in that weight class, you know? We've seen guys like James Vick who tried it, and unfortunately he failed. But maybe Luis Peña, over time, can finally get it right and push himself to the opportunities where he can fight bigger names. And I think he will. But right now, Kama Worthy got the best of him, and I think he'll learn from this loss.
Yeah, so there was only two fight announcements that I wanted to go over just because I thought they were really fun female fights. So the latest one, Roxanne Modafferi versus Andrea Lee 2. I do want to see that. I always like to see Roxanne Modafferi fight. And then the last one, the more exciting one for me, Michelle Waterson versus Angela Hill.
Great fight. Yeah. That's an awesome fight.
Dude, if Angela Hill, finally ranked, can beat the number 8, I am looking forward to this. This is going to be a good one.
Yeah, I mean, listen, whether people think that she won or not against Claudia Gadelha, she showed a new side of her. She fought the number 6th ranked girl in the world, and she was unranked and almost won that fight. Hey, I think that she, if she comes with the right mindset, she might go in there against Michelle and put on another great performance. Maybe this is Angela Hill's time. Maybe she finally put everything together. Sometimes we really see that, and it comes out of nowhere. You know, these fighters go on 4 or 5 fight winning streaks, and next thing you know, they're in title contention. And right now, with the current state of the 115-pound division, this is Angela Hill's time to really make a statement, especially if she can finish somebody like Michelle Waterson. Not saying that she will, but just saying that if she can do that, that will put her in a definitely bigger position than she's ever been before in her career. So we'll see what happens. This is one of those fights that I'm definitely going to be at the edge of my seat for.
Yeah, I'm excited for that one. So yeah, Andre, that's as much MMA. I mean, Invicta's coming back at the end of the month. That's exciting, you know. The good thing about Invicta coming back for the fighters is the more they fight, the more the UFC gets eyes on them, the bigger the other divisions can grow, bringing, you know, those new talents. Like, yes, you'll get the odd, like, call when somebody falls out, you know, somebody gets hurt. Oh, hey, Invicta, you know, we want to use this person, that person. But I think the more that they fight, the better chance they have of, you know, getting that notoriety and becoming, like, a name for the UFC to sign.
Yeah, and honestly, just to touch on that quickly, we need to see, me personally, I really would like to see a Grand Prix in Invicta for the women's 145-pound division and the 125-pound division. They really need to jump on that so they can get more contenders. That's the only real way that we're going to see these divisions stick around. Even with the men's 125-pound division, we need more fighters there as well. And I feel like these smaller promotions need to put on bigger spotlights for them, because the UFC obviously is always looking for great talent to sign. So that, I think that would be a great step in the right direction.
Yeah, we saw it. They did a whole Ultimate Fighter, you know, to bring fighters for the 125-pound division before. So I don't hate the idea, like you said, 145. What if they do another, like, style tournament like that where, you know, you have a bracket and the winner fights Amanda Nunes? Like, yes, I know she's on another level, you know. Yes, I understand that, but you got to do something, especially if she's looking to still fight. Like, and that's, you know, I don't think that's her division. I think that she's way better at 135, but I think it's the healthier version of her. Mm-hmm. I do think that she fights better at 135, but 145, you know, the less weight she has to cut, the better she will be in the long run. So, you know, with Invicta coming back, and one coming back as well, which is something that we were supposed to touch on last week that I forgot, that's exciting. You know, the one person who's still holding out is Scott Coker. Do you think that we're going to get an announcement soon? Or, I'm sorry to say, do you think this could be the end of Bellator? Like, what are the odds?
It's definitely possible for this to happen to Bellator. But, although I would be kind of sad, you know, because there are a lot of younger fighters who... This is their UFC, technically. Like, they don't get the exposure that some guys do, and they sign with Bellator because the UFC is just not in the market at the moment. So that's their opportunity to grow as fighters. But I will say this, and hopefully you understand what I mean, but if Bellator has to unfortunately close down, there are other opportunities for the best fighters to be signed by the UFC or by ONE Championship, giving them the opportunity to further fight the best in the world. And I think you know who I'm referring to. So, you know, even though it would be sad to see, there is also some good that will come out of that. But who knows?
He does only have one fight left. And yep. We were talking about it pre-pandemic. We talked about it during the pandemic. Like, oh, this is kind of going to drag out his contract. You know, he has that last fight. He already said he's going to, you know, play the market. I just need them to come back. First card, Michael Chandler versus whoever. Get that fight done. Get that fight done and make it happen. Bring him to the UFC, please.
Yeah, I hate to say Paul Felder, but who better to fight him at 155 for an opening after having two great wars with Eddie Alvarez to fight another fellow Philly contender? That's a beautiful story right there. That's enough for a main event, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know how much eye you're keeping on social media, but, like, have you seen Eddie? Eddie's been around lately. Like, he's in the area.
So. Yeah, listen, he's fighting Doggy, and he's training with Paul. He's training with Sean. Who better to train with? I mean, listen, those guys, he's getting one of the best strikers in MMA and one of the best grapplers in MMA, and Doggy is both. Doggy is a power puncher who has excellent sambo and excellent wrestling, pretty solid jiu-jitsu. His Muay Thai is nasty. I mean, the kid's dangerous, and Eddie has to be ready. But one thing I did notice was that Eddie looks swole. He looks massive, man. And I think that if he brings that to the table against Doggy, he could have an opportunity to actually beat him and maybe finish him on the ground like he did against Edward Flying. So definitely not counting Eddie out on this one. I don't really believe all the hype with Daggy because, listen, after what Christian Lee did to him on, what, a week's notice, maybe less, he's shown that, you know, this guy can be beaten with the right game plan. And I think Eddie's going to do that. And also, with Sean's, you know, upcoming fight, I think we're going to see a new resurgence with all of our Philly fighters. So it's awesome to see.
Yeah, there was a guy from the area, and I just want to shout him out because I spoke to him on Instagram. Larim Lenny Rufity. I think he was from, like, where Body Bags is from. But now he trains at Rufus Sport, so he moved out there. And he posted a picture with he was eating like lunch with like Punk and like some other guys from that gym. And like, you know, I have the Punk tattoo, so I sent it to him. I said, damn, that's crazy. I always forget that you guys are from the same gym, you know. And I explained to him why I have the tattoo and, you know, what Punk did for me, you know, when I was going through like a little something back in the day. And like, he was like, oh, I'm gonna show him this. And like, I had to like explain, like, yeah, you know, it was a rough time, but like that, like watching him do what he does best kind of helped me get through it. So I owe him that, and I got the tattoo as an ode to him. But that was cool that he was so quick, like, oh, I have to show him this. Like, so shout out to you. He's always like very cordial on, you know, Instagram when he DMs back and forth. I love when fighters interact. That's why we're such a big fan of Zed, even though now he's more like family to us. But yeah, man, like they say never meet your heroes, but like some of these guys, you know, they're doing it the right way at this level that I hope that they stay that way when they move up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, I mean, listen, distractions come very easily. There's a lot of stuff that, you know, people can be exposed to. But at the end of the day, it's all about your mindset. And I think that a lot of times celebrities, they kind of get lost in that. And when they get to hear that they impacted somebody's life in their work and in their field with just something simple that potentially could change someone's life, I mean, that means so much to them. Because at one point, they weren't at that stage. They were somewhere, like in CM Punk's example, probably wrestling for a developmental wrestling corporation, making ends meet maybe, you know, eating scraps, just trying to get by, and then eventually gets his big break. And it kind of takes them back to that moment. I've had those moments too with like actually meeting people that I looked up to, you know, in the music industry where I'm like, man, like, you have no idea what your music has done for me. Like, having rough times, going through stuff that I didn't think I was going to get through, and listening to that one song that changed my perspective, pushed me to a place where I didn't have to feel like the way I felt. So it's beautiful to see that, you know? But yeah, man, I mean, that's, it's really cool that he's training out there.
Yeah, for sure. That's one thing I always, like, I would go to like a lot of like conventions and stuff, like, and I would always thank the wrestlers, like, or anybody who I met, like Dan Severin I met one time, or, and I was like, oh, thank you. And he looked at me like, well, I'm like, yeah, thank you. Like, you've done so much, and you've given everybody so much entertainment. Like, that's the least we could do. Say thank you. Like, yes, I'm going to spend $20 to take a picture with you, but the least I could do on top of that $20 is say thank you.
Yeah.
Like, I'll never forget when I met Matt Riddle. It's a very famous clip within my friends group. Like, it was a surprise. Like, we were at a show at the 2300 Arena, House of Hardcore. And Matt Riddle comes out, you know, completely surprised. I did not know he was coming. And obviously, from the Ultimate Fighter, like, knowing he was a wrestler, like, and just like his character, he was such like so charismatic that like when I saw him, like, I flipped out. Like, if you've never seen the clip, I'm gonna send it to you so you can like laugh about it, but totally lost my mind. And when I met him after the fact, oh, the best dude. Sat there and talked with us for like 20 minutes. Just like, I remember he was like, yeah, like my boy, like, Eck told him, like, yo, my boy lost his mind when you came out the other day. Like, he was like, yeah, it's not the first time somebody pissed themselves seeing me. Like, he's like this. It's so funny because he lives in Pennsylvania, but he's like this, like, surfer, like, you know, like, just like this really, really, like, strange and awkward dude, but super funny. But he was just so nice, and that always stuck with me. And, like, please, to the fighters who are just getting started, like, be nice to your fans. Like, if someone comes up to you and, like, to say hi, like, Sean Brady, same thing. I saw him at a Marshalls, and I'm like, Sean Brady! I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. Do you mind if I take a picture with you? Like, he's like, oh, no, don't worry about it. Like, yeah, of course. Like, and, like, he's so stone-faced in the picture, but, like, he was really, it was, like, right after his first fight in the UFC, and, like, he was, like, so friendly and, like, surprised, like, oh, somebody knows who I am, like, yeah, and I told him, like, yeah, we do a podcast, we talk about you all the time, and he told me to hit him up, and I've hit him up, and, like, we've, like, you know, little back and forth, and he's always been so cordial, and I'm so thankful for that, because, like, he used to fight down the street, and now he fights for the UFC, and he's the same person.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful thing to see, man. Guys like Sean, you know, they come from they're cut from the same cloth that we are, you know? Hardworking guys, probably had to work a job while they were training, doing everything that they can to make the dream come true. And now he's in that position, and that's because of hard work, you know? That's what a lot of people don't see. You know, you see these little Instagram posts where guys are pumping iron and they're hitting the pads, but a lot of times there are guys who aren't doing that because they're focused on what matters too, which is the mental side. And you can see that not only is Sean ready for the spotlight, but he's ready for what comes with that. You know, there's going to be a lot of exposure. And right now with the guys he's training with, people are really starting to take notice at Sean, especially after fighting a guy of the caliber of Ismael Nardiev with all his pedigrees and all his titles and all this crap. And Sean just went in there and said, no, I'm still going to beat you, you know? So now Sean's obviously, especially on a lot of platforms, he's being seen as someone who's going to be an elite contender at least a year or two from now. And people will take notice eventually. It's going to be that one fight against that guy that they're going to say, ah, I don't think Sean's ready for him. And that's where he's going to shine the most. So it's exciting because I, for one, have always been a fan of Sean. Even in his amateur days where I was just starting to really get into MMA before I pushed over to the analytical side, you know, and seeing like how far he's come. Like that, it's incredible to see. You know, the kid has literally never lost. So it's awesome.
All right, Andre, my last thing. Do you have your phone near you?
Yes, I do.
Okay, I'm going to send you a post on Instagram, and I want your live reaction, okay?
Okay.
Okay, he just opened it.
Wow. Wow, that is so cool.
So explain to the people what you're looking at right now.
So this is the first look at the new UFC Limited Edition Ultimate Series figure images. These are what the actual figures look like. We have Max Holloway, Conor McGregor, Daniel Cormier, shout out to DC. I believe that's Jon Jones. Cowboy Cerrone and Khabib Nurmagomedov. Wow. These look really, really good. I love the shorts, too.
Right? See, okay. The titles. Remember their original picture I sent you of Conor?
Yeah.
Didn't they? Yo, they fixed it. The shorts was my biggest gripe. Mm-hmm. And they nailed it. These are killer.
Even the shorts on Cerrone and Nurmagomedov, they look great. Overall, I would buy some, especially the Max Holloway and DC one. That's excellent, man.
I'm very sad that the DC one only comes with one belt, just saying.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do like that they have both titles. So, you know, Khabib and John come with the new title, and then Connor and DC come with the old one. Cerrone comes with a cowboy hat, and Cerrone is the first Chase variant, which in action figure speak is there's two versions. There's going to be a gray short version and a white short version. You can pre-order the complete set of six right now on Ringside Collectibles for $139.99. That's all six figures guaranteed. These are limited, very, very limited. The Chase variant by itself is $28, and if you just want to buy one figure, it's $24, obviously, plus taxes and shipping. Yes, so me personally, I'm really hoping that they're available by this time next week so I can pre-order them, because, you know, sometimes I don't like to spend the money right away. But this one, I'm hoping that I have one more week that I can buy the complete set of six. I need these. You've been in my basement, Andre. You know the deal. I need these. I'm going to clear out. I'm going to shift the camera for a second. I'm going to clear out something over there in that nice new glass case. I don't know what yet. Maybe I'll take one of the belts out, and that will be a UFC shelf.
Nice.
I Very need nice. These. These are like my dream come true. I think they look great. The first, okay, so the guy explained, I explained it last week. The first series is going to be a smaller version, but the next few series are all going to be within the same scale. I think that these are going to fly. Like, Conor McGregor already, I think, is number one, I believe, in the in the Ringside top 10, like the top selling figures.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tell you right now, I believe that Conor McGregor topped the charts. Okay, that was 6 days ago. Of course, the new list isn't out. But I think I heard on a podcast that always gives the top 10 like a week early. I think Conor McGregor is number one. And I don't even think that he's the best figure. So that's just me personally. Ek had some concerns about Khabib's head. I said no. Khabib, because you know how he has the widow's peak?
Mm-hmm.
So without the hat, he looks silly. But I'm like, no, you need to put the hat on. Like, that's the Kafka, I think it's called. Like, you need the Kafka on for the Khabib figure. Like, first of all, that's the one thing that he's known for. And, yeah, you need it. Let me show you one more thing, Andre, because I think that this is a game changer. If you didn't like the Max Holloway figure before, I think that you're going to like it now. So, live reaction once again.
Oh! It is what it is.
Alternate head with the headband. One of the daddest mans on the planet, Max Holloway, with the screaming face. So much better than, like, his, like, because he looks like a poppy boy in the other face. But I think that this one works very well, Andre.
Yeah, it looks excellent. I love the headband, man. I wonder what it's going to look like with his new hairstyle. So dope.
Oh, he looks crazy. He looks nuts, dude.
He looks like an Elvis impersonator.
All right, Andre. So, last thing. These are, I've been meaning to ask you this since the reveal. The PS5, Andre. It's been some time. You've probably let it marinate in your heart, in your head. I believe that you're an Xbox guy. What did you think of the PS5?
It entices me. I think that it's an interesting concept that they have, that they finally announced. But I kind of take it as one of those situations where maybe they just kind of tossed something out just for a cash grab. I feel like maybe there was a couple things that could have been done better with the design. But overall, I like the concept. Will I be buying it? Probably not. Whether it's $800 or $600, I don't know if I'm going to be having that laying around. And if I do, that's probably going to be going towards, you know, making a pedal board, a brand new one, which is definitely in my plans for this year. But yeah, I liked it. If I do decide to buy it, you know, I'll definitely let you know. But we'll see. It's interesting because even with the Xbox Series X, I mean, I don't know if you saw, but like they were saying that one of them looks like a humidifier or one of those Netgear modems, and the other one just looks like a straight up refrigerator.
I I didn't understand the hate on the PS. I'm like, this thing looks nice. Like,
yeah, it looks cool.
Like, I thought it looked cool. But it's like, I think I heard it on IGN, like, PlayStation just has this obsession with wanting people to, like, have that as, like, a set piece, like, standing up. And, like, people yeah. want their stuff kind of hidden. Like, I get it. But, like I said, I think it looks nice. It's one of the better-looking, like, upright Johns.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, even if I show you now, like my setup, I will never put a console like that, ever, unless it's a PC. Because, dude, I've had really bad experiences with people getting excited and trying to unplug something in the back and then kicking it by accident, and then it falls on hardwood floor. I don't want that to happen, especially if I'm going to be pulling out $800 to pay for a console. I mean, I want it sitting on a table away from it being able to be pushed or kicked off. But overall, I mean, it's expensive. These consoles are expensive because they have better graphics, better processing power, but, you know, you'd probably be better off buying a PC, building one yourself. You know, I know that Ricky is definitely one who did that, and that he loves it, so I'm looking forward to doing that as well sometime in the future.
But yeah, Ricky did it smart. He, like, bought the pieces gradually. Yeah. That's my issue. Like, mm-hmm. we used this mic for, I think, 3 or 4 months. And, like, yeah. just out of nowhere, I just bought everything. But I had a plan. It's different. But I bought everything at once. Like, I can't do that with a PC.
I'm the same way. Trust me. I'm the same exact way. I did the same thing when I built my pedal board. I sat there and I bought 4 or 5 pieces plus the actual board and the case all in one shot. And then eventually I kept adding. But every time I would add, I'd buy 2 or 3. Just to feel like I'm getting closer and closer to my goal. I'll probably do the same thing with a PC. I'll probably just wait, and then I'll just add to cart, and then boom, send everything at once. But, you know, you gotta love Amazon for that, man.
Definitely, definitely. I think I got all my stuff in, like, 2 deliveries. I'll never forget that day, like, getting everything and being so excited. And yeah. With that being said, next week, you know, we said it was going to be this week. I forgot to text you a little earlier. Good thing you called me. Next week, for sure, in studio, Andre, me, we're breaking down UFC 251. I cannot wait, Andre. But I would like to leave that talk for next week. This has been your boy, this week's episode of Your Boy Elroy. I am Josh Prepagina. You can find me on all forms of social media, Elroy Preps in one word. You can find the show on Instagram at YBE MMA Podcast. Andre?
Everyone, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter under the name Flow State Dre. And you can, I should probably add, since I just started this week again, I'm also back officially on Twitch as Flow State Dre as well, where you can also find me streaming from time to time, playing Apex and maybe 2K here and there. Who knows? Maybe I'll just be chatting too. And also, you can find me on Facebook as Andre Rodriguez. And thank you all again for tuning in for another great episode.
Yeah, if it's your birthday, happy birthday. Enjoy the holiday this weekend. See you next week.